going to postpone the minutes for until someone gets here. Call the meeting to order, October 1st, 2015. We are short Rem and Bill Turley. Bill has got a Navy reunion, and Rem has got a work engagement. So while we're waiting for Simone, public health, we will get you started.
Do you want to hop up here?
Yeah, thanks. You know, just to, I come to these meetings and I really haven't had many chances to talk, like just reintroduce myself a little bit. You know, a Clark County Public Health Program Manager in the Environmental Public Health. The programs that I oversee are solid waste enforcement through the CPG grant. I also, we have a staff person that works under the Site Hazard Assessment Grant, and that's Brian Donker, if you don't know who that is. He primarily does work that's from a college grant also. I also oversee the Drinking Water Protection Permitting Program and the On-Site Septic Permitting and Operation and Maintenance Quality Assurance Program, just so you know sort of all the things that I'm involved in. But in regards to solid waste, so I'll start with this. The agency is undergoing, we are working on updating our strategic plan. The public health department is working on becoming a fully accredited public health agency. I'm not fully read into all the reasons for that, but the primary reasons are that the health departments across the country are getting accredited. The leadership believes that this positions us better for a lot of public health grants, federal, private, etc. And it's just a movement that's going on in the public health. So an aspect of that, if you want to click on that bottom one, yeah, thank you, is, and I'll try to explain this a little bit. It's not completely, I guess, intuitive because it's taken us all some time. So, and I don't know if some of you in your organizations in the past have worked through this, but I wanted to share this with you because this is in a draft where it's still kind of a work in progress. But I do want to, I will bring it to you very soon for you to look at to give us some feedback on your thoughts. But it's called the logic model. And it's basically a form of, so I wanted to at least go over it and try to explain what it is. And then at some point you'll get this document and then maybe at the next WAC we can get some feedback from you or individually get feedback. But every program in the agency is going through this process of looking at our programs. And what are the resources that we draw upon? That's the far left column. What are the activities that those resources support and that we as Clark County Public Health are performing? And then what are the outcomes we're expecting from those activities? And so these are, there's a different terminology. This is the one, but you know, these are goals. So sort of short, mid, and long-term goals for the program. This is important. One, it's part of sort of going through this process, and then what comes out of these goals are performance measures. So once we sort of talk about and hone in on the things that we want to achieve in our solid waste program, how will we then measure? How are we accomplishing those goals? Are we continuing to deliver on the goals and the performance measures that we've determined are important for the program and for public health? And so that this sort of sets the stage for developing those performance measures. And so I wanted to kind of give you an idea about why are we doing this and where are we going. But I will tell you from my perspective, the other reason that it's important is, you know, for me, and I'm mostly working with Melissa, but I try to think of the program as not a person, but a program that the health department's delivering. So is that in our role, because there's multiple agencies in the county that are doing solid waste work, our role, what are our resources, activities, and outcomes? Obviously, we do that in collaboration with the SWAC, with the Environmental Services, with the Department of Ecology, and Department of Health, and other stakeholders. And that's at the bottom of this. That's not as important. But I also think about it as this guides us as a program. And I'll just talk about a couple ways I think it's useful, even internally, not just to develop an accreditation. So I think we want to be really clear about what are the activities that we do every day to deliver the services that we're paid by the state and through the permitting fees we collect. I think we've got to be really clear on the goals, because as we look at the program, and let's say we have funding issues, we're having funding issues, right? We know that. What activities can we really deliver at a sufficient level, and how does it affect these outcomes and these goals that we've set for ourselves as a program? And so I think it's important, because in a resource-constrained environment that we are currently living in, we have to be very mindful about what we can do, exactly what we're doing, and what we're delivering. And so again, in collaboration with Environmental Services, in collaboration with SWAC, and the rest of the Health Department, I think this is a great way to sort of be transparent and be very explicit about how the work we're doing and why we're doing it. So that's my personal view. So I'll just go through this really quickly. It's still a work in progress. I'm still internally working through some of these things, but basically the resources are the resources that we have. And again, you'll see here, I'm including people, funding, the SWAC, because again, you're part of our program and advising us, and we have to deliver to you what you expect of us. The Environmental Services, because we're both working in solid waste and we do collaborate a lot in their handoffs. And you know, there's a lot of interaction in certain arenas. And then Ecology and their staff, because we work with them a lot for technical expertise, guidance, et cetera. Activities, again, I think you guys know most of these things. I won't read the whole list. I mean, the key ones, the key primary deliverable is their solid waste facility permitting and inspections. And enforcement that follows that. I think the other thing we do quite a bit of are those top two, complaint investigation and technical consultations. We get a lot of calls and questions about solid waste and other sort of peripheral solid waste issues that Melissa handles for us. And then the final one at the bottom, which is important, is landfill monitoring and closure. We have several landfills in the area that have been closed or in some stage of closure. Most of them are, I think, post-closure permits. And we're responsible for monitoring those landfills. So the outcomes, again, real short term is kind of the basics: protect public health and environmental resources from solid waste impacts, facility compliance, implement our portions, and collaborate on the solid waste management plan. Midterm, I will just say right now, and obviously this is a thing that changes over time. We see a need to, but I think for a couple years now we've talked about, at least from what I've been told, we need to start looking at the code and trying to update the code. But again, I don't think we, from our end, have had the resources to commit the time needed to do that. So I feel like it's important that we identify that we need to start working on this. Again, we would do this in collaboration with everyone here. And then again, just sort of continue to work with our partners, Ecology, Environmental Services, the SWAC, deliver sustainable waste reduction and management programs. So this is sort of building on this and thinking about where are we going from some point forward. And then finally, again, I think these are the big ticket items. I mean, we're here to protect human exposure, health impacts, protect drinking water, natural resources and land values, and just proper management. The thing that I put on, that we put on here too, that we think is important, and there's a lot embedded in this, is just this concept, and I think it's worded even in your mission, in ESDs, but a little differently, is improve the community's ability to manage waste effectively. And in my mind, that captures a lot of things. It captures just how are we managing the waste that we're generating, how can we do things like take care of all the extra food waste, does it make sense to ship it hundreds of miles? I know that that's a concern that several of you have, how do we manage that best? So anyway, so I kind of read most of it, but I wanted to at least get you familiar with what we're doing. This is, again, is in draft. What I would hope to do is within the next couple weeks get a copy of this out to you, and then maybe the next time we get together, or between now and the next time we get together, get some feedback and input from you on this. And what we'll end up doing is we'll take these, all the programs in public health are doing this for all of our programs, and then we'll start to build this into our strategic plan. And that's just one component of us. There's several fronts that we're doing to then work towards accreditation. So anyway, I don't know if anyone has any quick questions right now. Steve?
Describe for us a little bit the process of accreditation. What's required for you to become accredited?
Okay. Or if you know.
I don't know the answer. Accreditation, there's like a formal board. that's a national board that you have to submit your accreditation application to. Washington County in Oregon is an accredited public health agency. They go through the process. But it's updating your strategic plan, which includes these types of components. It's developing performance measures that the agency can use as an agency and within sub-programs, so that you can show that you're delivering right on the performance that you're set out to. I think it's also just demonstrating there's a strong part of public and community partnerships. That's a huge component of it. I think, again, I've been learning, being still relatively new to health funding, that is such a key, what we know it's a key issue for most of our programs. Working with communities, working with other agencies is critical to success nowadays. And then there's a whole package. So I couldn't describe the whole package to you. I mean, if you'd like, I can also provide. But basically then, in our target right now, we have to update policies, et cetera. There's a lot of components to it. But our goal is that by June 2017, because it takes time to put these things together, we will have, we'll deliver the package to the accreditation board. And then I think it can take around a year to get their review and feedback. So if you like, if there's more questions about that, I can provide a little more depth to that explanation.
Yeah. A couple of other things. I noticed that solid waste is covered pretty well, but I'm a little leery of why there isn't more of the sewage and the runoff and the right construction. You know, when you're building something, you got to put that bond around it and that. Is there a reason that isn't in there?
I mean, like for the sewage program and water program? Well, this is just the logic model for the solid waste program.
Okay, so you've got another one.
So I've got one.
So on Wednesday nights, you go next door and you got one for her, too.
Yeah, I mean, I've got five.
Oh, okay.
Because I've got one for hazard assessment, hazardous waste.
Okay.
I've got one for on-site permitting, on-site.
I just didn't want you to overlook that, though.
No, I know.
Okay.
And I'm the most, by the way, I'm the most behind of all the other managers because I have the most of these to get done. But we've been working sort of slowly on this. I mean, it's a challenge because I'm trying to engage with Melissa on it, and it's just a time issue. But I felt like we were far enough along that I was ready to share this with you guys, with the group, and then again, I'll over the next couple of weeks, I will get this to sort of make sure this passes muster internally, work with Melissa a little bit more on it, then bring it back to you guys and say, do you have any other ideas? Is something missing?
I was wondering, you've got Melissa involved in this, but is there any tie-up, and you don't show it here with the sheriff? He's got to go out there and do some of your enforcement, certainly.
No, so that's great. I mean, I haven't myself, since I've been in this job, myself dealt with the sheriff much, so again, that's sort of a blind spot for me, so that's a great point. So that's the kind of thing that I need.
Because, you know, there's only one Melissa,
No, I know.
And you're running her pretty fast.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
I mean,
I can imagine that.
Well,
you were talking about the bringing thing up to codes, too.
Yeah.
And the sheriff's sure going to be involved in the codes if he's got to back you up.
Right. So, I mean, the other way I'm trying to look at this, just again, trying not to, I mean, obviously Melissa has been the program, and before I came along, and me now, but also obviously Gary Beckett. I mean, he was been doing this a long time. But again, I mean, the other thing that I think about when I'm trying to do this, and again, the way I'd like you to think about it is, and this is what I said to Melissa, is like, I know, because we tend to think traditionally, hey, we're getting this grant from ecology, and it has these tasks, and it has these certain actions. But I want to take a step back and say, and try to look at this. We're a public health agency to protect public health and the resources, food, water, air. What does a solid waste program inside of a public health agency look like? So that's another thing I'm thinking about. And I'm not trying to think about it just in the context of this, of the grant that we get from the college.
Well, so how does it look, or how does a potential cutback because of this property tax debate that's going on, how is that going to affect the health department? I mean, we're looking at a 2% reduction in property taxes by the county councilors. if that were to go through, obviously it's going to affect everybody's budgets. Have you folks looked at that yet, or have you thought about it, or?
Well, not, I haven't, and it hasn't come up yet in the management leadership meetings. Not that there's been a lot, and that's kind of been my, like, the last 2 weeks or so, that's kind of been out there. I mean, what I will say about the programs that I manage, I mean, I don't think any of the programs that I mentioned earlier that I manage, including solid waste, get county general funds. I don't think we're directly funded from any of those. Solid waste is the permit fees that we charge and the grant from Ecology. That's primarily what funds this program.
And you've got the water on the other side. You know, the runoff water, we all pay that.
Yeah. So, well, the stormwater fees, the clean water fees go to Environmental Services. We don't, Public Health doesn't get, I don't think, a dime of that money. Because we get called about it. Hey, why are you charging me for this one? Call them.
Actually, under funding, the solid waste program has been giving some money to Environmental Services, but I know that discussion was to have that go away. So that could be a good opportunity to add.
I want to have that conversation. Again, what I feel is important, I mean, funding is key, right? Mm-hmm. You've got to have the resources to get people out there on the ground to do the work you're doing. But obviously, first, I want to try to come at it from what are the right services for us to deliver and how we deliver them. And right now, we know that those are resources, but in the future, the resources might be different. If people support us and support the mission and the work that we're doing, hopefully that's enough if we've got to go look at other sources of funding to fund those activities. Is a way I'm trying to also. And again, that's why I feel looking at this and putting something like this together helps us think about how we support our program and how we implement our program.
Great.
So,
other things you want to look at on that?
No, that was it. And I appreciate you. It's kind of we've been learning it, how to make this thing make sense to us. But you will see it more. And go ahead, Steve.
One idea that I would give you as you frame your outcomes is to think about things in terms of, what I would do is think about things in terms of risk.
Okay.
What are my biggest risks? And working down from that and make sure your program addresses big risks first, smaller risks second.
Okay.
Because you want to manage so that to prevent things from going wrong.
Right.
Seeing on the front page of the newspaper. That's kind of the mindset that I would attack that outcome section with.
Okay.
And the other thing I think that would be very challenging will be, and you use the word measures, I use the word metrics, which is the process of measuring to determine are you achieving what it is you're setting out to do.
Right.
And I'd be interested to see what your thoughts, and I don't expect it right now, but one of your challenges will be what metrics do you have to measure and determine that you're accomplishing your outcomes. I think that's exceptionally challenging.
It is. And so, I think this hasn't been a huge struggle, but I know once we get to that part, it's going to get a lot harder.
It is.
So, yeah,
I mean, you're going to be,
point.
What data sources do you have available, and are they relevant to your outcomes? I mean, that's a challenging puzzle.
And we have that in every program. I mean, just for sake of example, what you're saying, I mean, we collect a lot of information in the on-site program, because we have a database and system for bringing in permits or bringing in work that we have to review, and then it works through that, and then it gets closed or finished. But there's gobs of data on how long does it take to review something, why were things rejected. There's all this great data embedded in that database that could really help us start monitoring the performance of that program. But I'm not even sure now how we will cull it out of there.
Yeah.
I think we can, but that's an example. But we don't really have a similar level of database input and monitoring in solid waste right now. So that's a great, and I love the highest risk thing. I hadn't been thinking about that.
That's the way I'd frame it, because you want to protect the things that are going to hurt you the worst.
Right. No, that's a great point. So thanks, everyone. Since I'm just standing here already, I'll just try to cover a few other things, because I know I've taken longer than I normally do. One thing just to update. So the CPG grant, I think, on our end is done. We really only, ultimately, it was only about a 6% hit. Once all things were said and done, I think I reported that in the past. But it was a long process, and ecology was slow getting the grants. Part of it was with the new system, et cetera, but that's now in place. The site hazard assessment program that I mentioned earlier, which is a separate grant from ecology for doing reviews on facilities that have hazardous substances or where there's been releases of hazardous substances and we want to evaluate them. That program is now, we've been getting messages that they're projected by NEM income is a negative $63 million, primarily tied to gas, projected reduction because of lower gas prices and gas tax revenues. But again, right now, the last one, which was just like this afternoon, is they've got funding to fund through June of this year, and then we just, I guess, have to see if the revenue projections change or whatever. But I just wanted to update you on that. There are times when that program and solid waste interact quite a bit.
Would that be June of?
June of 2016. So that's the plan right now. We're actually meeting tomorrow to finish updating the grant application to ecology to be clear on what tasks we'll perform under the grant with the lower level of funding.
When are they only doing the application through June of 2016?
Right. The funding that we provided will only be through June of 2016.
Because typically it would be through...
Through 2017, is that? Yes. Great. Thanks for helping me clarify that. That's great. So those are the budget issues and sort of programmatic. The one other thing, two other quick things. I know the last time I was here, so the roof near landfill, there's a consent decree that was written in 2013 that had to do, and I wish I would have brought a map, but there's basically three pieces of property. There's the old landfill itself, which is kind of the south, the furthest corner, and then, I mean, a lot of you guys probably could draw it in your head, right, or draw it on the board. Next to it was an old wastewater lagoon. This is an old Boise Cascade landfill that had clarifier waste from their water system. The lagoon was next door. Then there was another 19-acre parcel to the north of it, about 18 to 19 acres to the north of it. There was a consent decree written in 2013 where basically it was a consent decree between the county and the persons that owned, they renamed themselves, but it was, I think the gentleman who's actually the company, was a gentleman named Ken Leahy, who I think a lot of people may know. He does a lot of construction work and earth moving work. But anyway, but they called themselves 2600 LLC, so the consent decree was between the county and 2600 LLC. We had gotten a request to release the 19-acre site from the consent decree. And this was a couple months ago, this process started. And I'm not familiar, I wasn't around when the consent decree was written, but a major component of the consent decree is it said, there. So if it was just a landfill that was going to be decommissioned, we probably would have had oversight of the decommissioning through the solid waste program. But instead, we struck an agreement with the city of Vancouver where, and the plan was, the overall plan was that these clarifier waste, which had some levels of dioxins in them from the pulping process, were going to be mined out and then spread along with other soils over all three of the properties. All three of the properties were going to be graded to the 100-year floodplain. And all of that work was going to be done under the auspices of a shoreline permit and a grading permit through the city of Vancouver. So there was a consent decree, and then there was an agreement between us and the city of Vancouver that the decommissioning of the landfill and the lagoon, and also the parcel wasn't part of the landfill, this 19-acre thing I'm referring to, but so this came in a couple months ago, and I had kind of just gotten it. But what we determined, and I worked with the county attorney, because basically that land, they finished all the grading up there. It's above floodplain. It's been mixed per the approved plan, the grading plan, and the shoreline permit. And they got someone, a buyer. And that's why they all said, hey, guys, we need you to sign off on the consent decree. I worked with the prosecuting attorney and really read this consent decree. Basically, the consent decree that the county wrote with 2600 LLC only pertained to the landfill, the old landfill, and the lagoon. Did not pertain to the 19 acres. And I also worked with Mike Davis on this. I got Mike involved. He didn't have a lot of personal history on it, but and then I worked with the attorney's office. because this company wanted us to release them from the consent decrees.
So that, but it's not covered, so you don't need to release them.
Exactly. So we finally got to that. And they, I think what happened, and I'll just tell you why, I think they wrote a sales agreement without really, I mean, it was a lawyer, a pretty high power law firm wrote a sales agreement that said, oh, part of the sales agreement is that we'll get this off the consent decree. But actually, it wasn't even part of the consent decree. So then they had to do some other things in the court to clear that up, basically. In effect, so what I want to tell you, in effect, we said we don't have anything to do with that. So that, as far as I know, is moving forward. There's one more paper they're going to file with the court that just identifies that that this isn't part of the consent decree. And I think I believe it's to clear up the issue with how they wrote the sales agreement for that land. But that apparently a sales and maybe some developments slated for the 1980s.
Oh, yeah.
So the only thing I'll tell you that's not done yet, so the consent decree hasn't been satisfied, because I don't think either the landfill or the old lagoon properties have completed being filled to grade to the 100-year floodplain. But now that we've kind of worked through this legal question and this other land transaction, I definitely want us to go back to these guys, 2600 LC, and say, look, what's the plan? When are you going to get done with this? I'm assuming if they make a land sale, they're going to want to get the other ones done and get the consent decree closed so they can sell those. But I don't know that part of it. But I at least wanted you to be aware of what was happening and what some of the questions were and where I think we'll go next.
I'm going to start pushing on this. This has been a 15-year issue in the city and the county. And we've had probably 10 names under that landfill.
Oh yeah, a lot of them.
And the fact that that lagoon and that pit where the landfill is still has not satisfied the consent decree, at what point is the county or the city going to push this? I mean, come on, folks. We've given Portside leeways. We've given everybody else leeways. When is somebody going to fill those holes in and get this thing done? We have fought this for 10 years that I've been on this board, and we get a bunch of hype. We get a bunch of promises, and we get no results. I really wish you would not have released or just sat there and said, well, maybe you need to finish the rest of it or something. Because, yeah, probably you're right. That was not part of the consent decree. But it was tied together.
Right.
It was tied, okay, you give us permission to dig this stuff up and spread it, and we'll do all these things. Well, they've dug it up, spread it, they're going to make their money, and we still have the lagoon and the pit that are not in compliance. Now, I don't know whether that's a county or a city issue or a health department issue, but it's not resolved. Mm-hmm. So whose problem is it?
Well, that's what I was just saying, Don. I mean, I've learned all this over the last 2 months. I mean, I even called Gary up and I tried to talk to Brian Carlson about it, because I knew he knew a lot more about the history and the issues there. But that's, I mean, I maybe didn't say it in the right words, but that's what I want to do is legally. We really had no, under the consent decree that was for the county, we had no say over the 19 acres. And that's what I clarified with the attorney's office. But I do, now that I know about it, now that I'm aware of the situation and the agreements that were made, I agree with you, I think. I think we're agreeing. I definitely want to turn now to this company and say, okay, when are we going to get these other two cells finished? Because I think, yeah, let's just get this done, make sure it's in accordance with the plans. And so we can close it.
Wasn't that part of the grading permit?
No, and that's exactly, I mean, basically there was, I forget what the term, the type of agreement it was. I've got the folder. And if anyone's interested, I can send you the consent decree itself if you're interested in any other attachments. But basically we wrote a deferral. We wrote a deferral document to the city that basically that closures all three of those properties were going to be implemented under the grading and shoreline permits that were in the oversight of the city of Vancouver.
So it's under the City of Vancouver's authority.
I think with the green permit and the shoreline permit, which allows for the 100-foot piece, but again, I haven't seen the consent decree or haven't spoken with Brian about kind of where it's at.
Could
from
you
what I understood, Leahy was supposed to make the issue go away and resolve it, so I'm just not sure if it's...
Okay, well, obviously it's not...
Taking the timeline they planned or taking longer than they planned, I don't know enough to know.
Shake the tree.
Where it's at.
Well, you'd like to know who and the timeline.
Yeah, could you find out for us, Rich? This has been a real sore subject for a lot of years.
For us too.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's get it done.
Well, it sounds like what's missing are consequences for non-performance.
There is a performance.
We don't know that yet because we don't until we see the consent decree, the timeline, what the agreement was.
Right.
We don't know if they're behind or.
Right.
Because I know it was going to take some time to do it, but I just don't know.
But I haven't heard. What my point is, if you have an agreement, typically there's consequences for not performing on the agreement, and it's not clear that there's consequences to whoever's supposed to perform.
No, that's great. That's a great comment. So I just wanted to update you. I think this is great direction. I agree with you. I would just assume now that I'm kind of almost all up to speed on what the situation is. It seems like we're really close to just getting it done. We should push that issue. I totally agree.
Is there a standard operating procedure for filling that? I mean, you don't just throw dirt on top of that. In that pit,
no,
with the fabric, you got to remove the fabric. You got to do all that stuff, don't you?
Yeah,
thick fabric. You know.
Yeah, there was a grading plan, that was approved by a company that again the city was to oversee through the permitting process. And I think, to my knowledge, to date they've mostly adhered to that plan. And again, it was mixing some of those former clarifier solids with other spoon soil and then spreading it out over all these acres.
Yes, that was the plan.
Right.
That was how the cells were going to be deactivated.
Exactly.
And it was going to be closed and remediated. But we still have the clarifier pit, and we still have the landfill. And those were part of the consent decree.
Right.
And you're telling me if we go out there right now, we're going to see two pits still.
I will say I don't know how. I think they've been filled, but they're not filled up yet to the 100-year floodplain. There's been filling of those cells, but they're not all the way to the final shoreline permit and grading permit.
Did they pull the fabric?
I'm not sure about that.
You know what I'd say? One of your homework assignments is to get a status update and be informed, and then you'll know.
Yeah.
Rather than us picking on you and being uninformed, that's not useful.
Are there names of people in the county and the city? Somebody who's responsible to where you get that to a point and say what's going on rather than all we're doing, it seems like, is speculating right now.
Right.
Well, I mean, again, I know that they've done partial filling of those cells, but again, we haven't been monitoring it because through the deferral agreement, that responsibility was given to the city of Vancouver.
But who in the city, though? I mean,
the person that I spoke to at the city was, and I'm going to forget his name. He's in a planning building. I can't.
Tom Wagner?
No. It wasn't Tom Wagner. No. So sorry. Just bad memory on my part. But I did work with someone. They wrote the letter for the 19 acres saying they had met all the conditions.
What Don is saying, somebody's got to make a decision.
No, well,
I don't know the people that are supposed to make the decision.
I can look at my file.
No, if you can report back and
you'll come back.
Yeah.
We'll come back to it.
Yeah.
Okay. And our plan does say that Ruther landfill, aka Boise Cascade landfill, Portside landfill, Food Valley landfill, is decommissioned. Because I know we went back and forth on that. So are we saying it's not decommissioned?
No, I think when they do the deferral, then it is proved to be decommissioned. Whether or not the timeline for the project, I don't know where that's at. So that's what we'll find. That's what we'll order next month.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Great. Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I want to regress and see if I can get a motion to approve the minutes. Right.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll second it.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed or abstained?
Abstained.
Did a good job.
No abstain. Rich, you're up.
Well, I've just got a short, I talked last month about the leaf coupons coming out. Now the leaves are starting to fall, so I've got coupons for y'all.
There we go.
So this is the detail if you want to share those around. The big change over the past is we're not making the coupons available now at the site. So in the past, you used to be able to go, there's four sites listed where the coupon can be used. And in the past, you used to be able to go to that site and get a coupon when you came in the door. This year, not the case. And there was a pretty good article in the paper last week.
Yeah, very good article.
That
you can get it online.
Details, people know what they can do.
Yeah.
People love getting these. Again, it's funding from shared between the county and the city. It helps people growing trees and helps get reduce stormwater issues and helps recover the materials. And they're good through December. That's it.
Okay. Scott?
I'll give an update next month.
Okay.
We might tie in on the rip.
Well, I figured that was coming, so.
Okay, you're up.
I'll give a quick update, and then we can segue. We had a very successful medication event.
One time.
In partnership, yeah, we collected a ton of pills from 1,000 participants. We were at four sites. It's a partnership with Prevent. And dual purpose, keep the pills out of the hands of teens, and they actually do, through surveys, have shown, I think it's 14% of teens are taking these things, which is really sad. Also keep them out of the waterways. Our last collection event for hazardous waste, also electronics, tires, scrap metal, block foam, appliances in Battleground will take place on Saturday, and that wraps up our 9 events throughout the county. We were at Fisher's Landing 2 weeks ago. We had about 500 folks come through, so again, record numbers. We did put out a press release, and you might see we're partnering with ARC, which does clothing, take back in Battleground, so we will have an additional item. We're looking at how everything will look in 2016, so depending on how involved SWAC wants to be in those discussions, that is an opportunity of expansion. How we would do that, I'm not sure, because there are competing interests, Goodwill, St. Vincent de Paul, and folks want to get that material as well.
Now, they're more interested in the clothing or in the fabric?
I'm not sure what they will do ultimately, but they were talking about clothing, toys, household goods.
Pulling stuff out like we were already doing.
Well, no, they,
They're not just after pounds of fabric or whatever.
No.
To reset.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then they market that separately. We do have a sort. If Alan wants to talk about that one, Alan's going to be participating, I believe.
Yes, on the 17th, yes. I'm going to go out to the west transfer station, all geared up with dirty stuff and sort garbage. I thought that'd be. I always thought, you know, a dumpster was a free garage sale, so this will be kind of fun. But they told me I couldn't take anything home. They say once you guys got it on the
they own it.
They own it.
It's a part of our contract.
Here, I thought at least if we're going through this garbage, it'd be finders keepers. No. But anyway, that's going to be an adventure for me, I'm sure.
And this is part of wrapping up our clean cart campaign. Again, the county's got about 118,000 of these blue super carts. They're big blue, and we visited about 20,000 of them. Did visual inspection on most of those that we could get to before the truck emptied them, and found out that about 20% of that content was garbage. And that's in keeping. It kind of ties into some of the discussions we'll have about recycling revenue. And
that isn't necessarily bad, is it? I've been reading that might be really good.
The garbage in the...
No, 20%.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. in things I've been reading, 20% is... A lot of people would be happy with that.
And then again, our issue with the 20%, which we've really been focusing on, is the glass. Because because folks may or may not know that they need to keep that separate on the side. And a lot of folks are relocating, and then folks didn't get the bin when they took away the other ones. So there is an opportunity for folks to put glass in, and then, of course, the wrap and the plastic bags and things that get wrapped around the gears and shut down the, what did you say, the $1 million sort system?
Multi-million dollar
sort system. So thank you, Alan, and we will be getting those results. This is the longer-term sort, so we ran the campaign, we did a pre-sort, ran the campaign, did another sort, found that we had actually reduced the levels of garbage significantly, including wrap, and that we want to see if there's sticking power. So we're going back about 5 months later. So we'll share those results with you. I've got some more arcane things I can talk about, if there's time. We had to adjust our budget, primarily due to the CPG grant funding cut that Chuck talked about. And we received, in the past, about $1.2 million of grant funds from the state. And as Brandon may know as well, the legislature came on hard times, and part of that, and of course, the Local Toxics Control Act, which gets that money through petroleum, those dollars are significantly down. So we went down $600,000, give or take, in our biennial budget, and then we had also forecast these recycling revenues to be coming in $40,000 to $50,000 a quarter. And those are coming in more like $15,000. Mm-hmm. So we had to shave another couple $100,000 there. It ended up being close to $900,000, called $1 million. We had to shave off our 2-year budget, which is significant. Luckily for us, because expenditures need to match revenues, we had a capital component dollar to do a turn lane into the central transfer station because of the traffic issues. We've never been able to get that in the planning. We ran into very expensive utility issues trying to put that stuff underground. We basically shelved that project. Luckily, it was on our budget books, so we've taken those dollars that were in our capital budget and removed them from our budget, which saved us about $650,000. And then we've also had savings through this reorganization of our staff to about $200,000 a year. So the good news is we had savings or budget adjustments we could make without having to lay off folks.
But that the capital program, that's a one-time adjustment.
It's a one-time adjustment. So again, if we were to go back and want to do that kind of capital, we either need to go into our enterprise fund, which we do have, because there are dollars that accrue, and that's always fun if we don't spend our full budget. But in terms of operating cost, it was a pretty small hit. We'd adjust maybe $40,000-$80,000 a year from our program budget. So a lot going on there. We have had some discussions with Waste Connections on our yard debris rate, and so we may need to update you on that as well. I can't remember. I think this is primarily the county. I don't know how the city's working with that, Rich, but I think we're about $6 and change to sign up for the voluntary yard debris program. We had a pretty good deal with the processor that was taking that material on a yardage basis, and we then went to a processor that weighs the material, and we found in doing that there were actually additional costs because the averaging of the cubic yard volume wasn't what we thought it was. So Waste Connections has come back and said, part of the contract, our processing costs are higher, therefore we need to adjust the rate, and so we're having those discussions.
You mean wet leaves are actually more expensive than cube leaves? I'll be done. And in a wet fall, you know.
And we do need to come up with a process that does that. The good news is every year we adjust those rates to the consumer price index, and in this contract we have fuel indexing as well. And because fuel is so down, they actually almost, I think, may have had a negative CPI because the fuel rates were in the negatives. So the question is, do we put some of that money in the stabilization fund? Or
rather than raising rates on the customers, because we don't want to do that.
Well, how would that work if you raise it in the county and then, Rich, you're not indicating that this is being thought about in the city?
Well, the city has a separate contract.
Yeah, but the expenses are the same.
Yard debris is included with our garbage and recycling, same contract. And so we've given a CPI for the last 20 years, which kind of goes, and again, the rates haven't gone up any more than that, and we don't have any provision in our contracts, and probably since it's so old, for any change in the tip fee at the processor. The county's contract, which is more recent, and which brought in the great CNG trucks, does have that as a factor. I think they're tied to the CNG rate on that particular contract. The recycling rate's probably still tied to the diesel index. So our contract doesn't, we've kind of looked at it as we gave you years in the past when the CPI when the CPI continued to go up, but the yard debris rate stayed level. It maybe went up a little bit and CPI continued to go up. So we don't see a need in our contract to really even look at it.
Two other quick items. I sent around a letter. College has approved our plan.
Very good.
And so it is official. 2015 solid waste management plan. I know many of you had many hands, especially Don, through the years of getting us here. And now folks who didn't necessarily have as many hands in the planning can have their hands on the implementation, which is really what this is about. And I think moving forward, we're going to want to have a strategic process in how we figure out what our priorities are, how we want to implement, how we want to report back to SWAC. And I think that is a good use of some of the discussions we've had about how SWAC, now that the planning process is done, a major role of SWAC through the years was to go through painstakingly, chapter by chapter, to get us to this point. So we have more time on our hands. And so how do we effectively utilize that? So those are some discussions Don and I have been having that we can have at a separate time. So we're at implementation, and one of the pieces I wanted to bring you forward with, one of the first implementation pieces we need to do, which has been outstanding, is convening our regional solid waste management system. Our regional solid waste system steering committee. And it's an ad hoc group, and it is talked about in our chapter two. It's the public works directors from each of our regional partners, and they have been tasked with reviewing priorities for waste reduction and waste recycling as set forth in the plan. Assure these priorities are incorporated in budget proposals and work programs of member organizations. Assess the results of programs and projects. Assure that future infrastructure needs are addressed. And maintain regular communication with the Clark County Solid Waste Advisory Commission and elected officials. So we're getting ready to convene that group. And that's another area that we want to make sure we coordinate the SWAC.
How do you see that coordination occurring? What does that mean?
Do you just have a, like he said, just have a meeting of minds?
I think it's a good time to have some discussion. I know Rich has a lot of background, too. The interlocal agreements that we have signed with our regional partners also outlines the similar language, that there will be this group, and they will have oversight, and their regional partner, and in return through that interlocal agreement, they are saying the garbage and recycling that flows in our jurisdiction will go through the system. And so that's how we have that partnership. We've signed interlocal agreements with all the cities and the town of Yakko, with the exception of Vancouver. So those agreements are signed through 2021. And Vancouver's expires the end of 2016. So part of this discussion is to make sure Vancouver's on board and we get their interlocal agreement signed. Part of it's also to make sure the regional partners, of course, are satisfied with the work we're doing because we're a regional system and it's funded with regional dollars for the most part. Do you want to add a little bit?
Well, I'd say, the key stuff, and again, Vancouver wants to see this committee started. We kind of went through a process in 2005 looking at regionalization. What should that be? Should we become a disposal district? Should we change our governance structure for the facilities once the public owns them down the road? So all of that, we feel there needs to be some good communication with the cities, because the cities are partners in this whole thing. I mean, Vancouver's a big city, but we also want to make sure that the small cities have a role in saying how things happen. So a lot of the focus we want to see is accountability, transparency, the identity, how we communicate with customers, with the public about our programs, our results and outcomes. So we just want to have that discussion to make sure we're all on the same page and that we're moving in that direction. So we see that formalizing the committee, which has been in the interlocal agreements for 5-6 years, we think that step needs to happen. So we're really anxious for this to start. We'd hope that it would start a year ago. And it's just been kind of a challenge to kind of get it all up and going. So
nobody here has ever seen one of these meetings?
There's never been a meeting.
Never been a meeting. Okay.
Well, there's been discussion.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and definitely we see the need for it. You know, we saw that 5-6 years ago. So now it's kind of like time to do it. Let's get this going. And instead of just kind of like, you know.
Who's driving this process?
It's kind of like the Rutner landfill.
Yeah, here we go.
Who's driving the process?
Well, the city has said we're not going to sign a new interlocal until we see the system working. And we're looking for some of the needs we have. I think the county's, I guess, driving the process. At one point, we looked into having a facilitator work with us, and some of the process now is to have the county kind of take the lead and organize it and convene. So again, we're going to have to get together with the folks and get everybody on the same page, I think, and then kind of start through how it's all going to work.
So the county commissioners have voted on this and accepted it?
The plan?
Yes.
Correct.
So then the only government or the only agency that's not signed into the interlocal is the city, because your contract's not up until...
No, so the city council adopted the plan. So all the city councils have adopted the plan. The interlocal agreements run through the end of 2016. The other cities extended those agreements or did new agreements basically with, I think, pretty much identical language. So it took it out for another 5 years. And Vancouver was just saying, we're not ready to sign an interlocal because we've still got a year and a half to run on our interlocal. You know, and that time's ticking down. We said, we want to have this system up and going. We want to have communication, accountability. We want to know that we're going to have a say in how decisions are made and how we communicate the identity for the shared regional programs before we sign on. So this is like our leverage to say, hey, I mean, if we just signed and rolled over and said, oh, we're good with interlocal, then 6 years from now, we'd be like, okay, the committee's never met. So
yeah.
This is what we see as our opportunity to say, well, let's get this committee involved.
That's your bargain.
It's important.
Yeah,
and the time when the public agencies may own the transfer stations is coming up. And if we don't start now and get this process going, where we can, and maybe it ends up in being a disposal district that kind of manages the facilities. If we don't get that started now, it's not going to happen. So we're excited about it. I think it'll be a positive thing. And again, you have some of that form and storm and Norman kind of thing, but I think the public works directors, I think, we're committed to it. The environmental services is committed to it. So we really just need to kind of sit down and start talking.
There might be some good cross-pollination there, too, you know, among the smaller, not necessarily with you guys, but with the smaller groups.
So the county's driving the meeting.
Mm-hmm. The kickoff meeting, the first meeting, Don Benton's going to chair and run.
Good.
When is that?
We have a doodle poll out right now because it's a lot of difficult schedules to coordinate, but it's going to be early November, I think.
Good.
Could you let us know in case anybody wants to go and observe?
Yes. Yes, that's a recommendation from the staff. And the recommendation in the plan is pretty quick, but I'll read it to you. Maintain a regional solid waste system steering committee through interlocal agreements to formalize roles, make recommendations of such matters as contracts, budgets, public education, outreach and marketing, resource sharing, system analysis, and improvements.
There's got to be somebody that's got to drive this. Somebody's got to own it. I don't know where that lives organizationally, but unless somebody owns it and makes proposals for this group to consider, not SWAC, but that that group you've described.
Well, and there clearly is a nexus with SWAC, and it's mentioned in this plan. You know, we'll maintain regular communication.
Right, and that was my initial question. What is that? Tell me what that looks like. And I haven't heard an answer to that question. It's not a complaint, just an observation. Because it sounds like this is a work in progress.
And again, as we have discussions on how we morph from the planning phase to the implementation phase, that's why I wanted to bring this up as a number one, which we've identified through discussions. This is a number one implementation recommendation on my list. And certainly sounds like the city of Vancouver's.
Since we have a single contractor for this, is there room or a place for them to fit into the meeting too, since they all draw from them?
At some point I think so, but this one is more at the public regional level.
Yeah.
With SWAC, clearly. As you also wanted to find that role. Okay, well that's good discussion though. And that was my last update.
Going back to your budget shortfall.
Yes.
You said a part of that was the hazardous substance tax.
It's the local control toxics account. Is that the
same? Is that oil by water?
It's a tax on petroleum. It's a tax on the hazard materials.
I wonder if there's been any forecasts looking forward, because we extended that to oil by rail this year, and I don't think it's being collected yet. But since that's obviously the trend, as oil being transported by rail, I'm wondering if some of your budget might be solved come next year anyways. I'll look into it. I can't, but I have to imagine that
just
it would.
Because prices are, it's on per gallon.
Per drum.
Per gallons, yeah. Per drum transport.
Yeah, right. 4.5 cents a drum. A lot of drums in a train.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know there was some little wrinkle a while back about the airlines that buy fuel for their airplanes and then fly across the country or across the ocean. Mm-hmm. They sort of opted out and said, well, we shouldn't have to pay.
Yes, they did.
On that. So, I mean, it could be a similar discussion. Where is that? Is this just transshipment of that oil, or is it consumed within the state? But I don't know whether you're more than that, other than to kind of know that there's probably...
I thought it was oil being into and flowed through the state. That's my understanding of it.
I want to say it has to be unloaded or loaded, but... We have lots of places to do that, too. But yeah, I... And it might be a different account or something, but I feel like that's been addressed to some degree.
Well, I think we are planning in the future for fewer and fewer CPG dollars.
Yeah. Probably wise.
I've got a couple of things. It seems like when you send out, what we're supposed to read before we come, sometimes I even get it read. And one of the things was an article by an outfit called Waste360.com, and it concluded a study on 7 May, and it said that Washington is number 6 best in the nation for solid waste, and it broke it down even that it said Washington was number 2 in energy consumption from renewable resources, number 9 in environmental quality, number 7 in eco-friendly behaviors. And believe it or not, Oregon's number 2. But we were the only 2 states west of the Mississippi to be in the top 10. And Washington State was number 1. It included, and you'll like this, the best government on the American state litter scorecard. They must have a scorecard about litter in the state.
and we were their very best on their, was there. I'd also like to say...
And then get a trophy.
No, no. And I'd also like to commend your public relations people at the Environmental. I've been reading the ads, and, you know, there's even on television now, we're seeing good ads about the pill pickup, the leaf pickup, and all of this. And they're well done, you know. And, you know, those of us that watch ads instead of the show, you know. And so the public relations is good. And the other thing is... I'm going to buy a pink cart because my wife is surviving breast cancer, and so I'm going to get one of your pink carts. Are they stolen very often?
You know, they haven't been, and they're numbered.
Oh, okay.
So not that we could get it back. Yeah. If all of a sudden it's two blocks down,
okay.
We'll know what to do. Again, congratulations.
Thank you.
There, but yeah. The second part of that is thanks for getting one of those recycled carts, because... 100% of those proceeds goes to the equipment aid
company. Thank you guys for putting that out. Sure. I'm sure everybody will stop by and say, where did you get that thing?
Well, let's hope they do.
Another thing is, I brought this to share. This is called the Junkyard Planet. And I haven't got very far. It's out of the library, so everybody can have it. It's by Adam Mintner. And I just picked out one particular thing that really bugs everybody. And in the solid waste arena, and that's Christmas tree lights. And we thought, oh, how are we going to deal with Christmas tree lights? Well, the very first chapter, page one, they deal with a cube of these Christmas tree lights that weighs 6,600 pounds. And they keep putting those cubes in those 40-foot boxes until they get 44,000 pounds of them. And then they take them to China. And the very first thing they used to do is just put them in a pile and burn them, and then they could get the copper, see. And they thought, well, that was really good, but the Chinese are pretty smart. And they figured that they could chip these things down to nothing, almost atoms, and they actually extract the plastic cover over the top of them, and then melt that back down, and it makes soles for your shoes. And then they have the copper beside, so there's actually no waste in all these Christmas tree lights. And we're talking 44,000 pounds of them. And the book sounds like they can get all they want, you know.
Did you say the human cost of doing that? If
you sold, oh, you know, just a few cents, you know.
No, I mean the human cost.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Imagine.
They've shown stuff on 60 Minutes of how they extract stuff, and it's not very...
No.
Very good.
And the big thing is transportation. You see, all this is done right close to where they need the copper wire. So there's no transportation for the copper to the plant that needs to make wire or whatever they're going to do with it. So far, I'm quite good. It's called The Junkyard Planet, and I think there's a couple different kind of books out too, but I found that one. Thank you.
Thank you.
Recycling revenue?
Yes. And if I could just very quickly go through the strategic plan. Is,
oh, sorry.
We missed it.
But we're close. This, I just wanted to, these would be brief items.
Oh, and here. Don't have my glasses.
If you can see this, I think it's in your packet as well. We have undergone a reorganization, and this was our first full week coming to closure of having our new staff. We are very excited. We have Andrew Loescher, I think you met last time, who's been doing our marketing communications and doing a terrific job. We also have Kim, who has started as a tech in the operations side. So you can see her on that little chart. She's doing a wonderful job, so thank you for officially joining us. She has been involved in our division's efforts since 2011, so really has worked her way into a job. Good job.
Nice job.
But I just wanted to point out here, of course, we have our Waste Connections partners to the left. That includes some of their environmental educators as well, and they are in the italics, Daniel Wobble, Melissa Tiefenthaler, Eric Haig, and Ellen Ives. They're tremendous assets. We get to utilize on paper through our contract two FTEs, so there's four mentioned here. We don't really work that way. We also have our regional partners, and that's part of that discussion we were having to make sure that they're all on board. Mike, you know, on the operations side, Andrew, who you've met, and Cindy, doing communications marketing. We have our two OAs, one is three-quarter time. And then really our focus that we'll be coming back to you on, I think, with our strategic planning is around our green programs. You know, the operations side is pretty cut and dry. You know, we might go into disposal district, talk about some of these other discussions about public ownership of the facilities, but that's a longer-term discussion. But our messaging and communications around these three areas is really the fun, creative work that we get to do. And you're familiar with some of the outreach events we do through Green Neighbors, as I talked about, the Clean Car Campaign, our Recycle Day events, and our green schools. We're number one in the state doing that work. And then we've been outreaching to green businesses, working with their green teams and trying to do a change there as well. So that is our new strategic look at how we do things. Really, again, we'll focus on these three green core programs: green schools, green business, green neighbors. And the other piece I wanted to quickly show, and this is straight, with the exception of the vision statement, solid waste has never had a vision statement, so we just put in a placeholder. But we're having a retreat on October 14th with Waste Connection staff in City of Vancouver to do some preliminary, well, to try to do some of this actual prioritized work that we're doing with all of our new staff, and how do we best implement the plan, meet our grant objectives, and any of the partners' needs. And that is from noon to 4 p.m. If anyone's interested in joining that, you can certainly include that in the announcement. And we start with our goals. These are straight out of the plan. And I'm not going to read through these. They're fairly general. We get down to our objectives. And this... these are tough needles to try to move with our department and division, but you know we're throwing away 250,000 tons of material a year, and that certainly trends with the economy. I would love to see all the Christmas lights pulled out again. You know, it's a process, so really. It does come back to our core green programs. I mean, how do we best message and try to get our early adopters and make Clark County a greener place to be? Recycling rate at 55%. Again, these are tough numbers to actually calculate. And if you want to move that, the tonnage is so huge that even running an entire new program with our big blue bins, you know, that brings in 35,000 tons. It seems like a lot, but if your denominator is 500,000 tons, you're still really not moving that needle. So I just wanted to be upfront that I want us to be successful, but again, some of these metrics are challenging. Certainly when we get down to our program level, bringing on new green businesses, number of pounds of medications we bring in, you know, we can hit those targets and do a good job, but the bigger level, it's a little harder.
But we need to remember that, you know, look at the construction that's going on, and the, you know, they can't find an empty house in the whole area. So, you know, it's just,
it's
you know, that's booming, and your denominator does get bigger as you're going.
And the denominator is your garbage, your recycling, and the diversion. So it gets big fast. Again, the objectives are more general, and then our strategy. which is important, engaging the public through our outreach events. And again, we do our 9 collection events throughout the region. We have a Recycled Arts Festival event, third weekend in June, medication events. We have our Green Business Showcase. We've got our Green School Summit, which is coming up November 3rd. So that's how we engage the public. Marketing, advertising, branding, website, social media, and then our strength in regional partnerships. And then keys to success. We talk here again about the Solid Waste System Steering Committee, establishing volunteers, executing our Green Neighbors, Green Business, Green School work plan, and communications and marketing. So again, most of this material is straight out of our plan, which we are now beginning to implement, and that kind of sets the stage for where we want to go. At our retreat, October 14th, we will really prioritize what programs we can do, because we know we're going to run the Clean Car Campaign, run the Recycle Day events, do a Recycled Arts Festival. We start to use up our staff, and we need to be strategic in how we do that. So we will be reporting back on that progress. I wanted to give you just an update. Sounds like both public health and us are going through the strategic planning process, so it's good stuff. Okay, recycling revenue. And I'm glad Scott's still here, thank you. We have seen problems, both garbage showing up in the blue carts and just basically a collapse of markets. Worldwide and local, and we have identified more from the county standpoint. This is an issue because if we're going to do budgeting, we need to, and we're going to count on a certain recycling revenue, and it comes in so much less, then that's tough adjusting to do throughout the year. So I think some questions we have, if there's good times, if there's bad times, can there be a stabilization fund? Or is this a systemic problem that we're going to have low recycling revenues? And there's different thoughts on that. And if that is the case, how do we prepare for that? And really, if one of our main objectives, and I know with waste hauling companies, they've invested lots and lots of money into this recycling infrastructure, how do we as a community, how do we as SWAC, how do we as partners address this issue? And so I didn't have anything prepared to present. Actually, it's Bill Turley who sent along this article, The Cost of Recycling, which I thought was provocative. Waste Management, their CEO, has come out very vocally that we can't maintain these programs unless communities start to pay. And Scott, I'd love to hear some words of wisdom from your end. And then really we can just kind of open it up and set the seeds for more discussion in the future.
Well, sure, and you know, not to beat up on Waste Management, because it could certainly be us, depending on our geographical area. But they, you know, they've actually shut down recycling centers. City and county governments have shuttered their recycling, their curbside recycling programs. You know, there's no. The markets have been in a downturn for years. And there's several reasons for that. You know, you got look at our domestic mills, or, well, you can't look at them anymore because they're closed. China has built these monster mills to take all of this recycling material. Two things happen there. One, they're using more of their own material, so they're less reliant on us. Two, people were sending recyclable material that contain a lot of solid waste, and so now they have, you may have heard of the green curtain, the green fence, that has gone away to a point, but they're still very strict on what they're going to allow into their country. So it's kind of all those that have combined to, you know, where are we at with markets, and at best they're sluggish. And you know, even scrap metal. Got a call today. You know, scrap went down again, along with aluminum. So it's kind of a combination of all those factors. And you know, we, and when I say we, this you know, we're pretty fortunate. We live in the Northwest. We're close to ports, and you know, our citizens and the public, they want to, if something they put in the recycle bin, they want it. There's a reasonable expectation that that should get recycled. But with that said, there's a cost of doing that. And so, where I can, if I had a penny for every time I was told that you're getting rich off of recycling, you know, it's just not true. And it's certainly not true in this downturn that we've had ebbs and flows. But this is going on year after year after year. There's no uptick. And we don't see it in the foreseeable future at all. That's the opening volley.
At least it's a little less than you would have thought because of the price of petroleum, which is a big mover of that commodity, is down. So it's one good thing about it.
Yeah. Well, in the recycling arena, because the petroleum prices are down, some of our recyclable materials, like our plastics, those markets completely went away. So I said, okay, well, you were able to have those in a recycle stream, not in our particular curbside stream. You could take them down to our transfer stations. But those markets are completely gone now, so it's difficult.
Lynn, I want to ask a couple of questions just to get informed.
Yes, sir.
So how is the recycling program currently funded? How's it paid for now?
Well, contractually wise, we get a processing fee, and then on the curbside materials that are sold, the county gets a cut of that, and then from that, the city gets a cut of that.
Okay, so you got a revenue source from the sale of commodities, mm-hmm. and a revenue source from your contract. Mm-hmm. Any other funding source? That's it?
That's it.
Okay. And then from the county side, the dollars for paying them pursuant to the contract come from where?
It all comes from that revenue share equation for us to pay the processing cost.
Okay. So it's not built into the rates that we pass along?
Yes, so Waste Connections through contracts charges the customers. All that money goes to Waste Connections minus, I think, a quarter comes back per customer per month to the county for administration fee.
Okay.
But all that money would go in, and then they would sell all the material value.
So it's being paid for by the people who are getting the service,
mm-hmm.
the rate payers.
Which is everyone.
Okay. The only observation I'll give you is that I work for the city of San Jose. I ran the solid waste program there. And
we do the hauling there.
Yeah. One of a number of companies that do the hauling there. And we know that recycling is not free. But we buried the cost in the on the garbage side. We pay as you throw. So smaller garbage bin, smaller price; larger bin, larger price.
Correct.
But we put it in the, and that's how we funded the program, to pay you guys to do your work.
Right.
It sounds like it's something similar to that here. And what I would argue is we need to look at, to me, the nexus is always the consumer. They ought to be paying for what they consume. I ought to pay for what I consume and the environmental costs that I place on the planet. People don't like it, but that's the connection.
And I think from a systemic standpoint, the fact that CRCs, this is a graph that Derek's helped send to me, that the processing revenue after all is done is below the cost,
right.
Then that's the rub. So we just need to figure that out.
Well, in San Jose, they jacked up our rates our recycling because they were losing.
Yep.
So it went up pretty right?
And in hindsight, what a great way. I mean, just embed that in the, so nobody really knows. But that was the way where we were at in a long-term contract.
Right.
Correct, because we can't change those rates, they're contractually set now, at this point.
Yeah, we did rate adjustments every year, for various reasons.
Right.
And again, I always go back to, I think the front end is worth discussing. If there's packaging representatives in the conversation, you know, we've got the front end, we've got the back end. I don't know why that isn't part of the conversation.
Because it's harder for us to influence. I would say it's harder for us to influence their behavior. I'm not disagreeing with you.
I'm just saying for raising awareness on, you know, as responsible producers, if, you know, how aware are they of this situation? Who knows? I mean, we're paying for it.
Right.
They're making the decisions for us.
Yep.
I mean, I know we have some decisions at the marketplace, but.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I'm no expert. I've read a lot of interesting, like Ecology of Commerce by Paul Hawken, created by McDonough. I mean, you're absolutely right. There's no cost associated with the disposal. It's not factored into the cost of the product.
It's not.
Until we figure out a way to do that. That waste stream and the cost of managing that waste stream fall to the public, the general public.
Yep.
And you know, I mean, I don't know who's trying to figure that out. I mean, I just remember at the last meeting I was at, and you were talking about all the uptick in cardboard because of all the Amazon deliveries, right? I mean, that's a huge growing business now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shopping online and now getting bulk delivered at your doorstep. It's creating all this additional.
Yep.
So, I mean, again, just thinking without understanding all the ramifications of saying something like this, boy, if there was a small fee attached to that, those boxes that the consumer was paying to get it delivered to residences in Clark County or the state of Washington, that's a revenue that could help manage and that waste stream or decentivize the packaging.
There you go.
So, I don't know, but I don't know where that has to
I work happen. For the post office, and I deliver those packages. Exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how many boxes I go, it's a big box, and I know there's nothing very big in this box.
But I think some of the programs, like the city has got with the recycling the film and the plastic bags, I mean, I like that program because there's now a way to take the plastic that's around the bottled water. There's a way to take the shrink wrap, the whatever, and yeah, we're collecting for free through some programs for a company that's using it, but at least it's being reused.
Well, I would say we're collecting without charge. It's the activity of collecting is not free. But it's without charge too.
Well, other people are paying charges for us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at least it's being done.
Yeah.
Yes. And 5 years ago it wasn't done.
Yeah, that's an improvement.
5 years ago it was plugging up the machinery. Now there's a place for that film.
But is it actually being, I mean I when you first came out with that I went into Safeway and there it was and I got my stuff and I threw it in there. But is it actually, is something happening with it?
Oh, definitely.
So it's not just, because like San Jose, they said put your styrofoam in your recycle, and then a big article came out and said all they're doing is putting it in the landfill.
Yep. That would be a mistake.
And we don't want to do that. not Northwest. No, we're not. But it is taken back by whatever grocery store chain they have now. It goes back to the distribution center. They got bailers there. And it bails all that stuff up, and they get a truckload of it. Well, yeah, then in that situation.
So something happens, actually, it's useful to do that.
That's $200-$300 a ton.
Right.
There.
Right. Because you get control of the quality of the commodity doing it that way.
Yeah, and if it comes through retail, it's clean.
Yeah.
If it comes to the curbside, it's dirty. Yeah. It goes to the landfill, that costs. And it jams up the machine. We're talking like thousands of dollars a month.
Yes.
Of the processing system to handle that material. So if we can get it out of there, that cuts their cost, and then it's not quite as sensitive. The revenue's down.
Well, I didn't realize how much of that artificial lumber was out there and being used.
Ooh, yeah.
I was at Salishan a a couple of weeks ago, and all their handrails down there is the Trex brand synthetic lumber. And you don't have to worry about it rotting. And all the walkways of cedar, I mean, they fall down all the time out there. But I think they're going more and more to this product, the handrails going up to the rooms. Well, it's a lot smoother on your hands, and it's painted, and will look nicer and live longer. I think the idea of looking at where does it start and then finding a home all the way through for it. But we've so much, like we have a city in this county that subsidizes recycling with their garbage rates. I mean, exactly what you were talking about. Well, that's their prerogative, I guess. But, you know, I mean, come on, folks. It's going to cost money.
Well, and you're a victim of your own success, too. I mean, you get to the goals you have, commodity prices are down, and you create your own supply and demand issue. And so, I mean, that is the point where the county probably does step in and have to have a line item to do it. I mean, rates are... Yeah, you can only address those so often, and then, I mean, increasing the rates on recycling is just going to put more things in the trash. So, I think the county is going to be one of the ones that has to bite the bullet there. But my two cents.
I don't know how we turn it off.
No,
we've created this.
Well, you don't want to, right? I mean,
well, in time, I think long term, it's probably going to change, but. I mean, we've been in this, what, since 2008, Scott? And you don't see any turnaround in the foreseeable future at all?
No. We're just hoping wherever that bottom is, we're hoping that that's where it stabilizes.
Right.
Not that it just keeps continuing going down. Or you're actually paying, after all the processing, you know, the source separating of the material, getting it cleaned up and processing it, then you're paying to get rid of it.
Well, there was a case.
There was a time. I know.
There were times in Portland, who is environmentally green, where I watched trailers go out of their recycling facilities at night, and they went straight to Arlington, loaded with materials. And I was there.
That's why you want to stand up, scrupulous.
I will say that your integrity is far superior to the people involved in that.
And we all should take our little cloth bags and we go into the grocery store. And I'm the only one that's ever there with them. They look at me. Even the clerks kind of look funny at me. You know, like, I really have to fill your bag?
Oh, I see a lot of people using them now.
I live out by the only Albertsons in town, and they don't. You know, they'll collect my plastic bags, but you know, and they got ones to buy, but I'm the only one that I ever see when I check out.
Well, and not to get in the weeds here, but you know, I think you know when you look at our recycle program from day one, going back to the three bin process, we inherently had a much cleaner product. We're very fortunate because people, they want to recycle and they want to recycle right, okay? So they went through the cart system. Even then, our recycled material was cleaner. Did we have more contamination? Yes, absolutely we did. But also we had more recyclable material as well. So, you know, that's why I'm real protective, you know, of our customers because They should be able to say that what I put in that recycle bin will be recycled. And so where we've worked collectively in our partnership, where we did add XYZ recyclable material at the time, knowing that those markets come and go, we've still got a great recycling program. You know, I hope I'm making that clear.
It just cost a lot of money.
Well, and that 20%, you know, when it's all messed up, isn't bad. Because I've, you know, read other articles, and that's a good
good place to be, if not better.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and we've always been able to say that. I mean, you can see that, you can visually see the difference in our material versus another city dumping car in a different state.
Are we cleaner than Portland?
Yo.
I don't know. My daughter cleaned out her car this summer and put stuff in the recycling, and I had to go out and scold her, and I said, "You don't understand. I'm on SWAT. You have a blue bin, my big blue, and they see those styrofoam cups and all that baggage."
Sounds like a TV show. Make your TV.
But why
put it in front of your neighbor's house?
So she's all kind of sheepish. Oh, so that's the way she learned.
Well, I'm glad. Yeah, it's all about education.
Yeah. But you wonder why kids nowadays think that you can just throw everything in the bottom of their car.
I don't know about that.
Well, I think we're going to have that conversation more and more. Is that what I'm hearing?
I think so. I think some of these we need to keep coming back with some progress reports.
Any other comments?
Maybe I'm the only one confused. I'm still confused about where we are on this paint thing.
So, good. I'm glad you mentioned that. I'll be very brief in the interest of time. We decided, really, as a SWAC, that I think was a good recommendation, that the county, because we lost our grant funds, would not step in with additional funds to prop up a potential business that could be funded by the private sector. But in doing this and having all of our dialogue and discussions, we have gotten Stericycle on the ball, because now they heard from Paint Care at the last meeting that if they're the first game in town, they will be supported as the first game in town. So
they get the commodity stream.
So, and there is, that is money on the table, and that is that producer.
So where does that put Chris?
I mean, so at this point, Chris Iverson, who was here, who manages our Washougal site, has run it up the flagpole to their folks in Kent. And he is 100% supportive of making this happen, and that's where we're at right now. So I'll add that to my list for report backs. Mm-hmm. And as soon as they break any ground or we have any kind of commitments, we will make sure we're party to that.
So we're out of the loop.
We're out of the loop funding-wise, and at this point we are just a participant through our product. We're going to be shipping them. Mm-hmm. We do pay to currently collect paint from 7 paint stores. So they get value in that material, and eventually that cost would go away if the state has to take care
of it. Anything's possible.
So thank you for that. Mm-hmm. I think it's a positive update.
You might also tell Andrew to start watching this, because, you know, we could use some good PR on that.
Yes.
You know, as soon as it's available.
And we'll be a state leader.
Yeah.
And will Paint Care be introduced again in the legislative process?
Yes.
2016?
Yes. Yes.
See where it goes?
We'll be reintroduced year after year after year.
It's already written.
Exactly.
And it's a much better bill now than it was in its original state.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
More people have more good ideas.
Any other comments, questions? Meeting is adjourned.
All right.
Well, you did a good meeting.
Thank you all. Yeah.